Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got two on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Want to get the punt. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to Big Blue. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could also chime in on the conversation via social media using hashtag Giants Chat. And Paul, Giants once again adding a new addition to the defensive line. They added Kenrick Ellis the other day. George Selvey, officially the new member of the Giants, comes over from the Cowboys where he spent two seasons.
Yeah, Selvey, of course, Giants fans will remember, was in training camp just a couple of seasons ago before he went to Dallas, was in the preseason games for a couple of shots there, and then wound up getting cut and going to the Cowboys, and then had a career year with seven sacks in the 2013 season. That number went down in 2014, but he is primarily what's known as a run-stopping defensive end, and I think that's the key here, Lance, and that's what I want to talk about today in terms of the theme of what the Giants have done in the last 48 hours. They have signed two primarily run-stopping defensive linemen. Ellis, we know at 345 or so pounds, is a plugger at the defensive tackle spot. And Selvey is more of a run stopper at the defensive end spot. Clearly, that is an emphasis that the Giants have put on their defensive line. And it would seem to me that by adding this veteran depth at that need slot, again, run stopping type, it kind of, to me, makes me feel like they might be done with the defensive line in terms of their offseason moves.
Well, we were going over the numbers before we came on the air today, and you do the math between the defensive ends and defensive tackles. We're talking about 10 players now, five at each. So there's plenty of depth and plenty of rotation. And if you look at how Spags utilizes his defensive players, Paul, he likes that rotation element where you don't necessarily just have to rely on the same two guys, or the same four, I should say, throughout the course of one game.
Yeah, very true. And you mentioned Spags, which is something you have to bring up here. Selvey originally drafted out of South Florida, where he was a teammate of JPP.
Yep.
And was highly touted, by the way, coming out of college. He's been with a handful of organizations since, but drafted by the Rams in 2010 when Steve Spagnuolo was the Rams head coach. I get it, he was a seventh-round pick, but obviously at that point, Spags saw something in him then, and you'd like to believe that now that Spags is here as well, he will try to do everything he can to bring out the best in a player that he once decided to select on draft day. I would add one other thing about this. You mentioned the 10 defensive linemen. I try to tell people all the time, and it's very, very important to understand, nobody makes the roster today, okay? You still have to go to training camp. You still have to win a job during the preseason before you get to the 53 that opens the regular season week number one. So, again, as I said with the offensive linemen a couple of weeks back, you know, Dallas Reynolds re-signed, John Jerry re-signed. These guys aren't automatically on the 53. There will still be competition. And I think that's important to note, Lance, because if I'm the Giants, I'm looking at the roster and I'm saying, hey, yes, they've got this hole or this hole or this position that's thin, but one of the other key factors, especially with the amount of injuries they've had in the last two seasons, is depth.
Yeah.
And what they have done, in my mind, over this offseason, for the most part, is done a great job of enhancing their depth at a number of positions across the board, and that should bode well because it enhances competition at training camp, which then, in theory, will make your 53 better.
They go up to about 90 when we're talking about training camp and OTA. So they're going to have a lot more bodies in the mix, and you need to protect yourself from injuries, as Paul just alluded to, because of that area being an issue for the Giants over the last few seasons. A lot of their starters were banged up, and the way you're able to digest that, Paul, you have these other complementary players who can step in or are familiar with the system. Other thing I wanted to emphasize with respect to Selvey, you talked about his history with Spags. His history with JPP, they spent that 2009 season together at South Florida, and I was looking up some of their stats because they played obviously on opposite ends, combined for 10 sacks and a handful of tackles for loss, 26 to be exact. So they did plenty of damage in that department as well.
Well, there were a lot of people who thought that Selvey coming out of school may have been the better prospect at the time. Then there were those who saw the JPP backflips, were enamored with his athleticism, and said, well, this could be a very interesting character in the pros. As it's turned out, clearly JPP has had the better pro career. But you always like to see college teammates get on the same team in the pros. If for no other reason, there's camaraderie, and you hope that there is almost a friendly rivalry, a brotherhood, if you will, and that one guy will try to maybe one-up the other. And that, of course, is good for your team because that means more production. Now, the Giants are hoping to see that with Beckham and Randall, who come out of LSU as wide receivers this year. I think clearly Beckham did everything and more than you could have hoped for. Reuben Randall, you know, I still think he showed some signs of inconsistency. But despite that, look at his final totals. He had over 900 yards receiving, I think over 70 catches.
Very strong finish.
It was still his best season. Still, even though I still think there's more there. And he could, you know, reach higher and reach his potential, cross your fingers, hopefully this year. But it was still his best year. And that's my point. That might have had something to do with Randall being here. Again, that LSU camaraderie thing.
And in terms of Selvey production-wise familiarity with the NFC East, I mean, he went up against DeMarco Murray in practice every day. Now he's going to have to go up against him twice a year with the Eagles. He knows what that Cowboys offensive line is all about. The transition period should not be very long, and he knows the personnel. And I think that's an important asset to bring to the table because you got to take care of business in your division, Paul. That's the most important.
Without a doubt. And remember, we told you that he was here with the Giants just 2 or 3 years ago. So he also understands what the Giants are about. He understands Spagnuolo from his days with the Rams, and he understands Tom Coughlin from his short time here during that one preseason. So there should not be much of a transition at all.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We've got the lines up and running. We want to certainly get to your feedback on this signing as well as other topics related to the New York Giants. So let's start the festivities. And Rick is in Florida to get us going. Rick, what's happening? Rick, are you there? Rick seems to have already started the party based on the background noise. Well, we'll put Rick on hold. We'll check back
either
in with him a little bit later.
One of the NCAA games.
That's a possibility, too. There is a round in Jacksonville, so anything's possible. Let's try with Jack in Florida. Jack, what's happening?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Doing well, Jack. How's everything?
It's going good. It's warm down here, so I'm okay.
Good to hear. So what do you have for us, Jack?
Okay, I just got two questions, and the first one's about the draft. You know, you guys always talk about on the show, the Giants always take the best player available, usually, regardless of position. And so at that number 9 spot, kind of like Bud Dupree out of Kentucky. You know, I know they just got Selvey yesterday, but, you know, I think that he can come in and be real similar to what JPP can do with his athleticism.
Well, Bud Dupree has experience as a defensive end. He's also played linebacker. Actually, when Anita and I were on yesterday, a caller also brought up that player. I think it just comes down to how the Giants view him since he's been utilized at both positions. And getting back to Paul's point to start the show, if you look and you evaluate from a numbers perspective how many defensive linemen the Giants have right now, you wonder if maybe they would go in a different direction given it appears they have a great deal of depth there.
Yeah, I could understand the whole depth things. You don't want to take snaps away from DeMontre or anybody too much, but.
Well, appreciate the full. Yeah, well, what else you got for us, Jack? Anything else?
Oh, yeah, just real quick. This is just like kind of hypothetical, but I know the roster isn't complete, and but if I'm assuming we probably have most of the offensive line starters on the roster right now, would it make more sense, because John Jerry's a much better pass blocker, to maybe move him over to the left guard and bring Schwartz over to the right side to maybe help in the run game and maybe help develop Justin Pugh?
Well, you know, I do think that Schwartz has already announced his preference to play right guard. I mean, I've talked to him about it, and I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, the writers have talked to him about it too, and he's made it clear that that is his preferred position. Now, you know, the Giants could have put him where they need him the most. I mean, they're not in the business of just making everybody happy. They're in the business of trying to win football games. So he'll play where they tell him to play. But I do think that he's probably going to get the first shot at right guard, and that it's the left guard position right now that is in a bit in flux if you're head coach Tom Coughlin. Now, does that mean John Jerry goes over there and competes at that spot? Maybe it does. Does it mean that Brett Jones, the CFL center, who has come down here now to play for Big Blue, does that mean he gets a chance to compete at left guard? I think he probably does also. You know, Dallas Reynolds is here. He'll probably get a chance to compete too, although you would think he'd be behind those two other guys based on their resumes. Or is maybe somebody else going to be the left guard? Are the Giants going to draft maybe Scherf and make him the right tackle, and Justin Pugh is going to compete at left guard? I mean, there are a lot of possibilities here.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Jack, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Brett Jones, who you alluded to, the player they signed from the CFL, mainly a center in the Canadian Football
Correct.
League, but did have limited experience at guard. So
one game.
That is certainly an option as well.
You look at his skill set, and I've talked to a lot of people, and they do believe that his skill set would translate to being a guard in this league if necessary. And again, understand that when the Giants made the move last year to draft Weston Richburg in the second round, he was drafted as a center and only played guard out of necessity. He is going to be the guy. I'm not going to say they hand him the keys to be the center because, look, if he falls on his face and it doesn't go very well, then he might not start the season as the number one center.
He's in the driver's seat at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, they've kind of given him the red carpet and said, go ahead and take it. You know, but he's going to have to prove that he deserves it. But that's the plan. Richburg was drafted to be this franchise's center for the next many, many years.
Well, and that gets back to the competition element. Better you have a lot of different players that can play a number of different positions because they've got to weed each other out. That's
you know,
what has to happen.
Here's the thing, and Lance, I can't say it enough. You have a major, major, major problem on a team that does not have competition. One, it basically shows that you don't have depth when you don't have competition. Secondly, well, what does that say then to your starters? If they're not really playing well and they know that there's nobody behind them to really challenge them or to take their jobs or their snaps away, that's not a good thing either. So lack of competition is bad. Simple put, you know, that's to say. It's bad.
It pushes everybody. That's why you need more bodies in play because that's obviously going to help try to make this team better. So let's head back to Florida. Now, Greg, is it Vic or Rick? It's Vic. Okay, so maybe that explains why he was a man of very few words earlier. Vic, what's happening?
And it's not Michael, by the way. Hello?
Vic, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, what's happening,
Vic?
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
We are doing very well. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Listen, I just have a statement and a question. I like the Selvey and the other guy, Hendricks.
Ellis, yeah.
Pickup. Now, my question is, did the Giants ever thought of bringing on Michael Sam in spite of everything else?
Michael Sam is first of all, a linebacker who I believe has been through, what is it, three teams or two teams?
Two.
Cowboys
he was with the Rams and
the Rams.
Cowboys. Yeah.
Rams and the Cowboys.
Yeah, cut from two practice squads, I believe is going to the free agent veteran combine to try to work out and see if he can enhance his numbers to potentially get another look. Do you really see a fit for him on this team based on what you know?
Well, he looked pretty good when he was with the Rams for those few games that he played, so I just thought that maybe the Giants might, think about bringing him on.
He's a practice squad player. When did he play? He was a practice squad player.
Okay. Well, I just
he was a practice squad player with
Dallas.
Well, Vic, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. He was narrowly defeated by Ethan Westbrooks when the Rams were making the last final cuts for their roster, and then Dallas eventually signed him to the practice squad. And I believe he's on Dancing with the Stars right now. I don't even know if he's at least actively playing football. Then again, you could be doing that outside of Dancing with the Stars. But he will be invited, I believe, to the Veterans Combine, as Paul alluded to, and have an opportunity to showcase his skills. And the Giants, like the other 31 teams, are going to be evaluating all the players that will be taking part in the Veterans Combine. I think it's a nice new addition to the NFL offseason, because sometimes you can find a player that has been passed over or hasn't been able to get a roster spot elsewhere that still has a few bit of mileage in the tank, as I like to say. So time will certainly tell with respect to his future in the league. Let's head back to the lines. Dan is in Pennsylvania. Dan, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. Loved your show. I wish you were on for more than an hour. I could listen to you guys all day talking about our G-men.
Appreciate that, Dan. So what do you have for us?
Listen, I just want to touch on two things. Of course, I'm going to bug you about the draft. But the Ellis and the Selvey signing, you know, one thing great, I think, is very good about that is that they're young guys too. You know, we got to make these tough decisions with these guys, you know, over the years with Tuck and Roll, but you know, it's nice getting when we do sign these guys, you know, that they're on that, like you say, on the right side of 30, or as John always says. So that's a good point, that they're young guys, not necessarily, you know, giant impact players, but, you know, more depth and competition, like Paul was just saying. So I think now our concerns to hit onto the draft, you know, of course, the O-line and the safety position. And just to touch on something somebody called at the end of the show yesterday, he was talking about the hypothetical situation of maybe, you know, being forced, let's say, you know, our best needs, like we just said, especially the O-line, let's say if Sheriff is gone or, you know, the prime guys are probably going to be gone. And if we are faced with, I mean, what a rotten thing to be faced with, but let's say Cooper and White. Right, two wide receivers. Everyone's saying, oh, we don't want to, you know, another wide receiver. We got to focus on the O-line. But, of course, the best player thing comes in there. And I'd be okay with it if we picked up one of those guys. I mean, who knows what the potential could be there, you know. And they seem to be addressing the needs, so everybody's just got to, you know, have those patience. And they're going to take care of the safety and the O-line. And, you know, I just wanted to see what you thought about that. Not that you haven't said it 100 times already.
Well, you know, I will say this, and I know Anita and I talked about it earlier in the week, and the more and more I think about it, if one of the two or maybe both of the premier wide receivers are on the board at number 9, I really do start to lean towards dealing the pick, because there are going to be calls. You know there are going to be calls. There are teams that are going to be really, really, really desperate to grab a Cooper or a White. And I think when you start hearing that phone ring and it's 2, 3, maybe even 4 teams on the other side of those lines, well, now you're in a great position to try to add some more picks. And, you know, then you have to decide not only what is the price, but how far down are you willing to drop to still get who you might have an eye on. And I think that, to me, the latter part of that equation is the trickier part. Because you can pretty much determine what price you want, and you can always negotiate that out. But it's an internal fight to decide how far are you willing to drop and still think that the guy you want's on the board. That's a tough one now. I mean, your stomach is going to be in knots over that.
It's hard to predict that, yeah.
You know, you go down 4 spots. Well, yeah, because let's go hypothetical here, okay? Let's just say that they've got a guy in mind, player X, and the two receivers are on the board. They get a bunch of calls. They move down 3 or 4 spots, and player X gets taken 2 spots later. I mean, that's just not a good feeling.
Right.
So
you're
to me, that's
–
but,
sure.
But I'm telling you, that's the scenario that I'm kind of leaning to right now.
Yeah, it could happen very well, but we got to go through another 5.5 weeks, I think, until this draft. What are we going to do? We're going to be pulling our hair out of our head, trying to decide who's going to take who and blah, 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 and you won't know until it actually starts going down.
That's it, baby. Well, Dan, April 30th.
Yep, that's the cycle of the NFL offseason. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. He brought up both wide receivers, and then you were throwing out hypotheticals, but let me throw this back at you, Paul. Based on what took place last season in terms of the draft, remember the Bills move up with Cleveland to grab Sammy Watkins.
Yes.
However, Mike Evans goes later, Odell Beckham, certainly a name you're familiar with, Kelvin Benjamin. There, to me, is just as much depth at the wide receiver position this year as there is last year. So maybe teams don't have the urge to go up, give up future assets to grab a wide receiver if they know later first round, early second round, they could get just as good of a productive player?
Well, let's put it this way. I think everybody pretty much went into last year's draft saying that Watkins was the premier guy and that there may have been two or three other folks like Evans and like Beckham who were really close to him and were kind of in that cluster. But everybody pretty much said going in that Watkins was the number one guy. Well, I think everybody thinks Cooper is the number one receiver in this draft based on what he did in college. And then White had this sensational combine, which raised his level into the Cooper category. I don't know that there's anybody else out there in the NFL that thinks there's a third wide receiver in that grouping. And I honestly also don't know how many people in the NFL, I'm not talking about the draft Knicks, but I'm talking about in the league, that really believe White's combine puts him even on the same level as Cooper. I really don't.
Well, and Kevin White comes from a system that's not necessarily an NFL type of system, whereas Cooper, we know the adaptation from college to the NFL may be a little bit easier. But
you know, Alabama was not exactly a pro-style offense either.
But they had Lane Kiffin as the offensive coordinator who is at least familiar with what it takes to get to the NFL.
Spectacular player. You cannot watch college film of Cooper and literally just your jaw hits the floor. He's really, really good. There's got to be somebody out there in the league that would be making that phone call at 9 if he's there. I would be shocked if the Giants' phone did not ring. Again, now you have to decide what do you want to do with that. But no, in terms of the question, do you think that there'll be a want or a need for somebody to move up? Lance, in my opinion, I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Well, at number 9, you're going to get a good playmaker, you assume. So there are going to be teams that may not even want a wide receiver, Paul. They may want another type of player, a quarterback. Who knows what's going to happen with Mariota, assuming Winston goes number 1. So that'll also create some buzz.
Listening to Sirius this morning, there seemed to be a lot of conversation that Winston is almost assured of going to the Bucs and that everybody else is trying to get up into the top 3 or so to see if they can get Mariota. That's what they seem to be putting out there in the winds today. Look, fine. I mean, if, you know, two quarterbacks go real early, I think that's great
it
for
helps
the Giants.
The Giants. They don't need it. Exactly.
They don't be looking for a quarterback.
And I've been saying that for weeks. I think the Winston-Mariota dynamic is certainly going to influence the options at number 9 for the Giants. And that really is playing a game of the unknown at this point.
Yeah. So, anyway, fun stuff. And, again, we got a lot of weeks to go through this. But I would say right now that in terms of those receivers, I still think you're looking at Cooper first and White second, in spite of what happened at the combine.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll also be getting to your tweets momentarily. He's Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We head back to the lines. We check in with Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Len. How about yourself?
Good. Hanging in there. Got a little snow, but outside of that, everything's fine.
Well, it's heading our way.
Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, can't you keep it for yourself, please?
No, we're passing it up 95, right past the Meadowlands.
This
right
is one time it's okay with me if nobody shares.
It's a touchy-feely subject for Paul, Len. Let's not go in the snow direction.
Listen, guys, it's okay with me if we don't answer the phone on draft day. Let's not get greedy. We're in a great position at number 9, and the phone doesn't have to ring to tell me that. So let's go get. I mean, we're gonna get a good player. We're gonna get a good player at 9, and let's not get greedy.
Well, Len, you do have to answer the phone, though, because to do due diligence, you need to know what people are throwing out there.
Oh, I know. But I'm being real conservative on this. I understand that. And I'm enamored with that 9 pick. I see the names. I read about their backgrounds, and I keep saying to myself, you know, there's going to be 5 or 6 guys right there that's almost, close your eyes, pick them out of a hat, going to be a star in this league. And I'm hoping it's an offensive lineman because it looks like there's a need there at left guard. I like the conversation early on where you talked about possibly Schwartz moving over to right guard. You know, it was his play at right guard in Kansas City
yes.
that caused us to pay all that money.
That's correct.
it wasn't his play at left guard. So, you know, so I'm thinking, as an amateur scout, I'd like to see him move over to right guard, and then one of the, the young guys in the draft, hopefully either Scherf or Collins are there. I think either one of them we can plug in, and they'll be a first-day starter. And then we got an offensive line that we carry forward 3, 4, 5 years for Eli. And, we're set and we're ready to go, and we keep our fingers crossed that nobody gets hurt. Paul, I wanted to mention something to you. You know, you keep talking about competition, and I just want to make sure I understand where you're coming from with this competition thing. You don't doubt that guys like Selvey and Ellis are going to make this team, do you?
Oh, no. I think that certainly they are signed here with the anticipation that they're upgrading the 53 and that they're going to be there. You have to believe that. But that, again, what if hypothetical player X, and it could be any one of the guys we mentioned, comes into training camp, doesn't perform well, falls flat on his face, and maybe some third-round or fourth-round draft pick, or maybe some undrafted rookie free agent comes in and basically kicks his butt. You can't be married to keeping that veteran if they don't deserve to be here.
Well, not that this person fell into that particular category, but if we look back at last training camp, a guy like Corey Washington comes in and, you know, plays in the preseason the way he played, and everybody got excited about it. You take that guy you were just talking about, Paul, somehow you get that guy on the roster, or somehow you keep your fingers crossed. But
well, Len,
you know,
what about Kerry Wynn is another guy I throw out there.
Here's a good example, okay, Len? And, yeah, let me interrupt you 1 second, Lance.
Here's a great example. Sure.
Let me build off what he just said. Kerry Wynn was a great, great throw out here by Lance because they decided to cut Israel Adonijé, who was a veteran that they picked up going into training camp. I thought had a really good preseason, and I was vocal about it. I said, Adonijé's got to be the last defensive lineman on the roster. He deserves to make it. Look at the production in the preseason. He's a good teammate. He's a good hard worker. He's a veteran. He's not costing you a lot. This seems like the perfect guy to take that last spot on the depth chart. And what happened? They kept Kerry Wynn instead. And I was openly questioning that because I said, well, what has Kerry Wynn done during the preseason games better than Adonijé? I didn't think I had seen it. But what the coaches determined was Kerry Wynn, young guy, plenty of upside. We think we see enough about him in practice and his work ethic and his eagerness that we can really see something there that's going to be valuable. And you know what? Kerry Wynn had a very good December, and now he's really a part of this team's rotation. So there's a great example where
Lance's example, as usual, is better than my example. Wynn is a better example than Washington. But the point is if you get a guy to excel as Wynn and Washington did in training camp, you figure out a way to keep them. But I guess the point I was trying to make was this. If you give these guys bonus monies, bonus money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to cut those guys.
No. The anticipation is that he's going to be there and that he's going to do what you think he will, and he'll earn the spot as expected. But you're not giving them Fort Knox bonus money because if it doesn't work out, you don't want to hamstring yourself.
Yes. Now, let me just make one other point. You know, I like these signings. I like the signings they're coming up with. I'm not going to, jump up and down or anything, but I like these signings. I like 4 to 8 year guys. When the bulk of your roster falls within that 4 to 8 year area, I think you got a chance. And that's who I see them signing. You know, legitimate NFL players, guys who belong in the league, who fall into that category, who've been in good clubhouses, been in winning clubhouses. So I like those kind of signings. But, you know, there is a reason why George Selvey isn't going to play on Dallas next year. As soon as Greg Hardy, I don't agree with that signing for Dallas, but that's the way it goes. As soon as they signed Hardy, Selvey was essentially on the street. Dallas is not going to suffer because George Selvey is not going to be on that team next year. They've got some defensive ends on that team.
Well, Len, though, in fairness, and I don't mean to cut you off, they also have very little cap space. And from what I read, Hardy took up pretty much all of their remaining cap space. So, you know, you at least have to understand it from that perspective. I'm not disagreeing with you about the depth that they have, but I think financially it would be very tough for them to retain some of their other players who were contributors last season, like a guy like Selby.
There were reports around the league, too, that, like, the Vikings and the Buccaneers were two teams that apparently were pretty hot to bring Selby in. So it does appear like he had done enough to show interest from other teams. Now, remember, he'd already been here once. He knows Spags from his days with the Rams. I would say the Giants probably had an inside track.
Hey, you got time for just one more quick point, Paul.
Real
I asked you this the other day. You didn't get a chance to respond. Best case scenario on JPP is he signs, you know, he signs today, and we got him. He signs that, you know, he signs that contract. You know, we settle, et cetera. What's the worst case scenario? I mean, what are we looking at here as a possibility for JPP? Were we talking about training camp no show?
No. First of all, I would not be worried about him signing the tender for the franchise tag. He will do that, and he will be here, and he will play his butt off this season, hoping that he gets a multi-year deal at the end of the 2015 year. However, understand this. The Giants could also franchise tag him a second straight season. So there is no hurry on anybody's part to necessarily do a bad deal. The Giants are going to want to do a deal that's good for them. He's going to want one that's good for him.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right on that. I really do.
Don't worry about it.
I just get this bad feeling.
Come on. Come on. I'm telling you, Eli's just like John Mara said yesterday, and haven't I been telling you all of this for the last 4 months? Eli Manning, barring a catastrophic injury, will get an extension with the Giants. I don't care what date it comes. He's going to get one, and he's going to retire as a Giant. John Mara said as much yesterday to the media. Again, I don't understand what people don't understand. Why they unclog their ears, for goodness sakes. Len, here's the worst case scenario.
I'm not worried about Eli. I'm on JPP.
Worst case scenario is JPP gets hurt. That's the worst case scenario. The second worst case scenario is he plays under the one-year franchise tender and only has a mediocre season of like maybe 8 sacks, 50-something tackles, and he's kind of caught in the middle between a guy you don't want to lose but a guy you don't want to pay a lot of money to, because then you're not going to want to tag him. So those are your worst-case scenarios.
If Paul says he's going to be in training camp, I'm going with Paul.
He'll be there.
You guys have a great weekend.
All right,
thanks for taking my call.
You as well. Thanks so much for weighing in. I also want to work in some tweets before we head back to the phone lines. We were talking about Cooper, White. Do the Giants take a wide receiver at number 9? I think Shane Hall brings up a good point at Shane Hall 145. Why would you deal the pick, Paul, when you can get a top player? How often do the Giants trade down? Almost never. And he also brought up the point that you could potentially have two rookie wide receivers under rookie contracts for the next 4 to 5 years, Odell Beckham and, let's say, a Cooper or a White.
Well, the reason about dealing the pick is because, let's just say you only go down 3 spots, okay? That puts you at 12. You got a pretty good guy at 12 last season. So I won't buy that first part of his argument, that trading out of 9 takes you out of blue-chip territory. I just don't see that at all. In terms of your second point, look, the Giants have some needs on this team. Don't kid yourself. If you think they are season-ready on March the 20th to be a playoff team, I think you're probably mistaken. They know that they've got some upgrades to do. And we've all discussed it many times over, some of the spots where they're thin. If it means going down just a couple of spots, 2 or 3 spots, and maybe throwing in a second-round draft pick,
assets.
That's not necessarily a terrible thing, because they do have some needs here. I mean, understand, this is not a defending Super Bowl champion that's coming back with maybe just a little bit of a leak in the dam. That's not the deal here, okay? They could use some guys. So that's my take on that.
And you could do a lot of heavy lifting in the draft based on what they did last season. And when you have all of these players who can produce in year one, they're still on the rookie contract, that doesn't stress out your cap. That's why it's so important to do very well in the draft, because it could yield to flexibility financially.
Well, and quite frankly, again, when you're talking about the cap, I believe there's an anticipation it's going to move up again next season. The Giants do have some high-priced veterans like an Eli Manning, who undoubtedly will get an extension that will help out your cap number whenever he does sign that. You would think Prince Amukamara is another one of those guys who they believe is going to be here for many more years to come, which means he'll get an extension that will make his cap number go down as well. So that's not much of an issue for me.
You just always want to have room, though. You never know what's going to happen.
Understood.
Down the road. It's not just from an extension perspective. I'm talking about maybe there's an attractive free agent out there that you want to make
a
more competitive offer. You don't know what's going to happen, obviously, 2 or 3 years from now. Let's head back to the phone lines. Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Pete? What's up, L Boogie? How you doing? Hey.
Doing well, Dre. How's everything with you?
Everything's good. Hey, Paul, I remember last week, Cole asked you about Victor Cruz. I wasn't sure if you two knew that he does videos, updated videos on Bleacher Report for Uninterrupted. And he pretty much said the last time he was on a treadmill, he was running on 90% body weight. And within the next, if not next week, the week after, he should be actually running on a hard surface. I don't know how much you could take for that. I'm not worried about him running forward. His asset was that first step off the line and the cuts. That's what I'm worried. I want to know, you know, I just want to see how he does in that fashion.
Dre, to be fair, and you guys know, I try to be extremely fair. I prefer to give you guys firsthand information. I'm not really one who likes to talk about what somebody said on the internet or what somebody said on a podcast or what somebody's told a newspaper guy last week. You know, when people ask me about how's Victor Cruz doing, I prefer to tell you, hey, Victor Cruz told me this, or I've seen Victor Cruz at practice, in mini camp, or at summer training camp, and this is what I see. I did that with you with Mario Monningham last year. I told you guys, the hope was that his knee was going to be okay. They thought it would progress. They thought he would shake the rust off. But as we watched him, during each and every week of the preseason, we saw that it just wasn't happening. I feel very comfortable telling you that because I see it. I'm here every day. But Victor Cruz, I don't see him in practice because there is no practice right now. So anything that we say is purely speculation. Victor Cruz can say that he's going to be ready for training camp. John Mara can tell us that all systems look to be go. But none of us really know exactly what that deal is until he gets out on that field right here at the Quest Center.
I guess my overall question was in reference to bringing that as a preference. If he gets out there for training camp and does not perform, he's not even 20%, what's the next step for the Giants?
Well, you
know, what are they going to do?
Look, if you want to play this real conservatively, and I think the Giants will lean towards that direction, Lance, what you do is you don't have him do anything in the spring or very minimal stuff for sure going into the summer, and then you PUP him like they did with John Beeson last season. And you basically treat him with kid gloves during the course of training camp, and maybe he doesn't even play in the preseason. That's a possibility if you want to play this ultra conservatively. Again, I think that's with any player. We're not just talking about Victor Cruz. Any player coming off of a significant injury as he had, you could certainly go that route and say, look, he's experienced. He knows what he's doing. We know he's a good player. We know he's got good work ethic. We could just take our feet off of the pedal and PUP and got him through it. And look, even we told you about JPP with his back last year. I remember saying to you guys, if he misses the first couple of games even, now, remember that? Remember he could miss the first couple of games of the season. That's okay. You know, you don't want to screw this guy up.
I agree. And I guess my next question is, Adrian Robertson, what's the next step with him? You know, and I'll listen to your response. You know, what are we going to do if we do bring in, you know, that blocking tight end that has the ability to go out and pass primarily, kind of like another Daniel Fells type.
Daniel Fells re-signed yesterday. You knew that, right?
Right.
Okay, so Fells is back. Appreciate the call, Dre. Thank you. The next step for Adrian Robinson is production. It's that simple.
Well, if you look at the depth chart, it's Dinelle, it's Daniel Fells, and then it's Adrian Robinson. So if you're the last guy on the depth chart, you know the writing's on the wall. If they bring in another guy for competition, you need to elevate your game. So I think Adrian Robinson was in that position last season, and I think he understands that heading into this offseason, it's another important offseason to prove his versatility and to show that he deserves a roster spot and he can help chip in to the goal for the Giants to get back to winning football.
Production. Production, production. Got to show production. And it's time. You know, he's been here for a little while now. It's time. One thing before we go back to the calls, Lance, I did want to mention the bracket challenge. We haven't done that yet today. And the Giants.com folks have worked very hard, not only picking out the plays, but putting the highlights together. We've done some commentary. The first round is complete. They are now on to the second round on Giants.com. You're able to vote for the best plays that the Giants have made in the five-year history of MetLife Stadium. And so get a look at those things on Giants.com, and we will give you updates as the week goes on as to the progress of the votes and which plays look like they're going to advance into round number three.
Connected to the theme of March Madness, you go to Giants.com/NYG bracket to see all the details. You can view the plays. Paul and I have a few videos that are up on the main page right now previewing those second round matchups. And speaking of Victor Cruz, he is involved in a handful of the top plays at MetLife
Stadium. Can't imagine why.
I know. Just wanted to throw that out there. Random thought that popped into my head.
Okay.
I think he's had enough of an impact in terms of the pigskin. Let's head back to the phone lines. Will is in Seattle. Will, what's happening?
Hi.
How we doing, Will?
I have a few questions to ask.
Sure. What do you have?
What do you think the chance is that we draft the safety out of Alabama, Landon Collins?
I would be surprised if a safety went that high. I don't see a great deal of depth at that position. I think safeties are going to be selected, but at number nine, Paul, I'd be very surprised if a safety in general, in terms of even the teams that are around the Giants, goes that high.
Yeah, at this point, I have not heard anybody tell me that they believe there's a safety valued as high as the ninth pick overall in the draft, and that's regardless of what team is in that slot.
Yeah.
It just so happens to be the Giants. Yes, they certainly need help at safety, but the value board doesn't seem to match the need for the Giants at that pick. Look, could it happen? I guess anything's possible. But I would be surprised myself.
What else do you have, Will?
Because, I was just wondering because, you know, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix from the Packers, he was also an Alabama safety. But he did amazing.
Well, keep this in mind, Will, and I'll let you continue. Ha Clinton Dix, remember, went much later in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
Packers were a playoff team, so he did not go as high as number nine. I understand the Alabama connection, but even last year, Ha Clinton Dix, and don't forget the Jets had Calvin Pryor, another relatively late round pick. So you at least need to keep that in mind.
All right. Do you think the Giants would go offense or defense in the draft?
Well, again, the value board's going to determine a lot about what they're looking at. Usually, just to build off of your point also, Lance, safeties are not top 10 picks, usually. I mean, the value just isn't there for their role in the game. You know, if you listen to the show at all and you listen to me at all, you know I still always prefer the foundation is in the trenches, and I'm really, really stuck on trying to improve the offensive line. And it would seem to me that Scherf would be the guy who's got the most value of the prospects available, especially if you were picking at number nine. But, again, it's still a crapshoot. So thank you very, very much for the call.
Appreciate that, Will. Thanks so much. Pryor was at 18 last season. Mm-hmm. Ha Ha Clinton Dix was 21. And even if we went back to 2013, which was what Paul's point was, you don't see safeties go within that top 10 grouping. I'm looking now at the 2013 draft to see when the first safety went. Kenny Vaccaro went at 15 to the Saints. So 15 to 20, you could start seeing safeties. 1 through 15, 1 through 10, it's not necessarily a trend in this league.
Let me throw this at you, too. If you want to look at the need component of the draft, if you're the Giants, right now it would appear that the two safeties you do have signed on the roster are more strong safeties than they are free safeties. And Collins, I think, is more of a strong safety by everybody's account. I don't know that anybody has projected him to be a free safety in the National Football League. So that's another thing you want to think about. If you want to throw that, again, need component in, you know, they need a really good free safety right now because I just think that Burhe and Taylor are both in the box guys. So why would you add a third in the box guy?
That's a good point. It's not just need, but it's how does that safety fit into your system and what you're going to do and how you're going to utilize that player. I also went back to 2012, no safeties in the first round, just to paint the picture for what the last three drafts have looked like with respect to that position. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Hugo is in New Jersey. Hugo, what's happening?
Hey, guys. It's been quite some time since I called in. Taking a snow day today, so I was fortunate enough.
And see,
in the new hour, the new hour.
The word snow is such a dirty word to me.
I told you, Hugo, it was a touchy-feely term. You had to go there.
Oh.
Well, you know, in the meantime, Frank from Tampa and I think Charlie from Portland, Maine, were essentially my spokesman. But anyhow, guys, one point I wanted to make, let's not confuse Collins. I think the Collins from the SEC the Giants should draft this year is Lael Collins.
You like the offensive
lineman.
Yeah, the tackle. You like him. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I think he's going to be this year's Zach Martin, to be honest with you. And Paul, to your earlier point, I think there's going to be some opportunities to maybe pick up that type of player by trading down three or four spots and picking up some extra picks. And I'm not so much focused on the wide receivers being available and allowing that trade, but if you look at the top of the draft, there's a bunch of these edge rushing tweeners that really don't fit the 4-3, guys like Gregory Fowler, Beasley, and Ray. And I could see a 3-4 team having pretty significant demand for those type of players and giving up more than they should
Great point. I agree with you 1,000%. There is this infatuation with these tweener guys who, as you probably know, I'm not a big fan of. I like to take these guys and say, hey, look, you're either a defensive end with your hand in the dirt, or you're going to be a stand-up 3-4 guy up there on the line of scrimmage, or you're playing outside linebacker for me. I'm not a big fan of those tweener guys, but you're 1,000% correct. There are some teams that really salivate at them and would probably be ringing the Giants' phone to jump up. So you make another great point. I think one way or the other, Lance, between what he's talking about plus those possible receivers, guys who could drop, the Giants are going to get some ringing phones at number 9. I really believe that's going to happen. Again, whether or not they make a move remains to be seen. But go ahead.
Terrific. Yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about is one of the things we want to achieve is balance, right? I mean, I can't, you know, there were so many plays last year where there were just blown up plays, wasted plays on offense as we try to achieve balance just because we weren't physical enough up front. And I just think we're still a long ways away from being physical up front and getting to that place where we can achieve balance. I mean, our blocking tight end, we don't really have a blocking tight end. I mean, I think Donnell has committed to improve. We'll see where that shakes out. And, you know, some of the investments we made in the offensive line just, to me, aren't consistent with the team trying to achieve balance. I mean, you know, Richburg's a bit undersized. Pugh's a bit undersized. Beatty is Beatty. I don't know. I think despite the investments we've made, we're not really aligned with what the coaching staff wants to achieve. However, having said that, I think Shane Vereen's sort of our hedge because if you recall that playoff game against the Ravens, the Patriots tried to run the ball, could not get anywhere. They stopped banging their heads against the wall eventually, and then they went to that short passing game as a replacement. So Vereen might be the hedge just in case we can't get it all done in 1 year in establishing balance.
My only comeback to you there is that Richie Seibert and Chris Snee were not exactly, you know, huge-sized guards. In fact, they were both pint-sized guards. If you go by the standard boxcar figures for what those guys should be, but Chris Snee was the strongest guy on the team.
Yeah,
and Richie Seibert was a foaming-at-the-mouth Doberman pincher, a real pit bull, if you will. And so those guys did fine and helped the Giants win Super Bowls. You don't necessarily have to be the prototype size of an offensive lineman to be physical, strong, and to move guys out of the way. So I'm not going to agree with your point there, but what I would agree with is that the offensive line still needs fortification. I'm not going to argue that point at all. And whether or not it's Scherf or it's Collins or it's Pete, you know, okay, fine. If they get another stud offensive lineman in here, you know I'm throwing a pizza party.
I agree.
I mean, I like to see that nasty in the players. I think Richburg could be a nasty player. I think he could. And I also think that maybe Pugh could have – I'm not you know, hopeful about Beatty. I mean, he kind of is what he is at this point. But anyhow, looking for improvement up front, just like you, Paul.
Thank you.
And I think that's always been the goal. The Giants have always tried to win the battle in the trenches, and that's why they're bringing in these rotational players, at least on the defensive line, so Spags has opportunities to utilize multiple guys as opposed to having to necessarily rely on perhaps a group of two or a group of four. With respect to Shane Vereen, which was Hugo's other point, Paul, I think the bottom line is they brought him in to be a receiving threat. I mean, that has been his MO with the New England Patriots, so that's not necessarily a surprise. He was referencing what he did with New England. It's another option. Andre Williams is not a big-time receiver based on his college days, but I think surprised many this rookie season in at least taking advantage of his opportunities. And Jennings, we know, can be a receiver. Durability always comes into question because of his injury past. But Vereen, I mean, he's a guy that can act as a running back. He can act as a wide receiver. He can stretch the defense.
Here's the thing about Vereen. He adds another explosive in-space guy to that offensive attack, and I think that's really important to them. Because, Lance, you're talking about McAdoo and his West Coast-style offense, which usually requires some type of check-down receiver in all of the passing routes. Well, if the Giants were checking down a pass to a Jennings, or for that matter a Donnell, or an Andre Williams, you pretty much know that that pass is going to be caught, and if they get a couple of yards after the catch, that's about all it's going to be. Well, guess what? You check down a pass to Vereen, he might turn an 8-yard pass into a 25-yard catch and run. And that's the difference. That's what makes Vereen such an important component to what the Giants want to do, because he's another big play threat out of what may not be designed as a big play when he gets the ball.
And when you get rid of the football very quickly, as you just touched on in this type of an offense, if you could have a guy that could do the heavy lifting up the field after grabbing a 2 or 3 yard catch, you'll certainly take that. Let's head back to the line. Zach is in New Jersey. Zach, what's happening? Zach, are you there? Zach's going once?
Yes.
Zach,
hello.
What's happening?
How you doing?
We're doing well, Zach. What's on your mind?
I got two major points, really. One is that you know, a lot of Giants fans are kind of freaking out a little bit about, you know, who are the Giants signing, and, you know, free agency is slow, and we have a hole here and a hole here. And what I like to say, I always had this this phrase, in Jerry we trust, that referring to Jerry Reese, you know, he brought us 2 Super Bowls with his, you know, with his players. And, you know, at this point, I've put in full faith into him. And, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, even though, you know, the signs he makes, you know, or the draft picks he makes aren't, you know, as sexy as, you know, they can be. But, you know, as of right now, I mean, people are saying that, you know, the safety position, Antrell Roll, is, you know, a huge loss and we're missing a safety. And I agree with that. But to be totally honest, I think it's, you know, more of his leadership that we're losing than his actual play. I mean, he was getting down in age and, you know, he's near the top of safeties, but I mean, they got a bunch of guys in the mix. I don't know if you know anything about the guy Nate Burhe, but I mean, if you look at the highlight tape of this guy, he can play. And
for
all those Giants fans that are saying that there's no safety, we don't have a safety, you should look at his highlight tape.
Yeah, the Giants were very happy to get him late in the draft last season when they did, and I know they have high hopes for him and expectations. Of course, again, training camp's going to tell the story. Does he deserve to be a starter? We're only going to find that out when he gets out on the field and has a real opportunity at a starting job. I would add one thing to you about Antrell Roll, though. You know, when you hear Coach Coughlin talk about there was nobody in that locker room who wanted to win for his teammates more than Antrell Roll, that says it all. Clearly a very important component to this team. But every time a leader leaves the locker room, somebody else has to emerge. And I'm going to give you another one of Coach Coughlin's favorite words, opportunity. He loves that word. And that's what he likes to do. He likes to throw that out there. When somebody exits, he wants somebody else to take advantage of that opportunity. So that means there are going to have to be some other voices in that locker room that will need to step up and show the Giants the way to winning games in 2015.
Well, I'll give you two examples from an X's and O's standpoint. Leadership's a whole other debate, but in terms of players seeing, okay, the guy in front of me on the depth chart left, there's a void, I need to do the heavy lifting. You look at what Hankins did when Linville Joseph left, certainly assumed his role, and I keep pointing out, and I sound like a broken record, but Larry Donnell last season with the tight end position, here we go, an unknown commodity on the roster.
There was production there.
There was production. So Nat Burhey could very well be the next guy, but he's got to do the heavy lifting. He needs to answer the call.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you something else, too. With the offensive line, I remember, you know, when Sean O'Hara, who was rather vocal, retired, and it was like, okay, well, Chris Snee suddenly became a little bit more vocal and became, you know, the leader of that offensive line. It has to happen. Somebody else needs to step up and take charge of the vocal leadership in that locker room, and the Giants will just have to find somebody else. I mean, that's just a fact of life. And it happens in this game because there's always going to be turnover, Lance.
That's the name of the game, especially when you're dealing with the issues of the salary cap. Zach, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. A few minutes left. Want to try to squeeze in a few more callers. We go to Cody in North Carolina. Cody, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
Hi.
We're doing well, Cody. What do you have for us?
All right. I just wanted to make a couple points, and I just wanted to say that we need to stay at number nine and not, you know, make any crazy moves. I think we need to stay. You know, I trust the organization. I trust Reese and what they're going to do. I also wanted to say something about Victor Cruz and the bracket. You know, that catch where he had with against the Jets, I think that could go against the Odell Beckham catch.
Well, it is on the other side of the bracket, so it's certainly got a chance to
there
do so. And we will never dispute the importance or significance of that play. And in terms of your first point, again, I want to make it very clear. I'm not advocating that the Giants trade the number nine pick. What I'm saying is I suspect, given the circumstances, they may have the opportunity to field phone calls, and they should field phone calls. Whether or not they pull the trigger, that's another question entirely. But I think the climate would be right for them if they want to do so.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And, you know, they are going to have a lot of opportunities or phone calls or whatever. But, you know, in my sense, I'm not saying that, you would. But what I'm saying is they should really, you know, think about what we got at nine. I think we're doing good with the line. We're getting the defensive line straight. We're going to look, you know, do what we got to do with the offensive line. I mean, Reese know what he's doing, man. And I'm pretty pumped up for the next season, man. For real.
Good stuff, man. Call us again.
Appreciate the phone call, Cody. Thanks so much.
I will say this. It's my experience with the Giants organization that if value and also that need component to some degree do meet head on at the position that they're picking at, and their guy is sitting there, they're not moving out. I will tell you that.
Why take the chance?
They will not take that chance. If the guy's there and everything meets exactly where it's supposed to, they're taking their guy, and that's it. You don't even try. Don't even try to pry that pick away from them because they will take their guy.
Before we get back to the lines, and we'll try to get in a few more calls here before we wrap up, Cody referenced the March Madness top play MetLife Stadium bracket. Just to give a little preview, Victor Cruz's 99-yard catch against the Jets is going up against Paul's favorite play, the Travis Beckham zigzag catch for a touchdown, if you recall, against the Green Bay Packers, which got them ahead early 7-0. That was the game where Green Bay was 11-0 entering the contest and stayed unbeaten with a last-minute field goal.
It's kind of like a favorite play only because it's almost Charlie Chaplin-like. It's almost like a silent movie when you watch him zigzagging through the Packers secondary, and you're like waiting for like something to happen, and he just kind of finds his way into the end zone. It's Charlie Chaplin-like.
It was an unsuspected player that made a big-time play. That's really what it came down to. And Cody gave us a nice way to promote that. And once again, as we mentioned earlier in the program, giants.com/NYG bracket. Head there today. Second round is underway. You could vote to see who you want to determine to advance. Cody just said he'd like to see Odell Beckham's catch against Victor Cruz's long touchdown. And Giants fans, you know the rest of the history that helped propel them to a Super Bowl in 2011. Let's head back to the lines. Rudy is on Long Island. Rudy, what's happening?
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, Rudy. What do you have for us?
Good, good. I just wanted to say, first of all, I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. I really enjoy you guys.
Thank you.
Show,
appreciate
I listen
that.
Every single day and stream every day. It's awesome.
Thanks so much. So what do you have for us?
All right, yeah, I know you guys don't have much time, so I'll go quickly. I just have a couple of quick questions and quick points. One question I had, do you guys think that the Giants are handling the free agency by seeing who's becoming a free agent next year or, like, the next couple of years? Do you think they're kind of handling it that way? Because I'm kind of confused as why they didn't make a move on a safety end. And also my other question with that is, do you think what would have a bigger impact for us, or I should say, what do you feel has – I know you like the O-line, but do you think picking an O-line in the draft or safety would have a bigger impact? And then lastly, really quickly, I know a lot of people saying we have depth in wide receiver, but I don't really hear a lot about Preston Parker, and I think that he kind of filled in the gap for us when we really needed it last year or last season. And, you know, I think, you know, he should get a little bit more credit than what he's been given recently. And, I feel like everybody's worried about the offense, which while we do need to protect our biggest asset, but if you look at the end of last season, Eli and our offense really took off with the new system, and I have 100% faith that we're going to be 10 times better. And just to end my point, and y'all take the answers off air, I just want to make, you know, kind of like Charlie does, I just want to make a quick prediction and say we're going 11 wins this year and making it to the playoffs. So if you could throw that on the wall for me, Rudy from Long Island.
We will certainly add it to the wall, Rudy. Once I get a piece of paper, I'm looking at to the board on my left here where we have some predictions from last season. We're going to take these down, and we're going to put Rudy at the top of the list, 11 wins. Mark my words.
I know it's kind of early, but that's I have faith this year.
Sounds good. Well, we appreciate your optimism, appreciate the phone call, and we'll address now a number of things that Rudy threw out, and he did throw a number of things.
All right, and I'm already confused because there were so many, but go ahead.
Let's start first in terms of impact, offensive lineman versus safety in round one. Who could come in here year one, make a bigger impact?
Well,
that was at least one of
you
his
know
points.
Where I'm going.
Of course. I think it goes without saying, and I would agree with Paul, offensive line. I think there's an opportunity to potentially start day one, and I think based on value would make a lot of sense at number nine. The other question he had was about how there's been a lot of safeties on the free agent market and they've gone elsewhere. I think a lot of them, you have to take into consideration, Paul, got some big money. And based on the Giants' cap and other factors, you're not going to throw money out there just for the sake of throwing money out there.
I believe John Mara told the media yesterday at one of his press briefings at one of the Giants' events that indeed they had interest in looking at McCourty. But his number was just so out of whack with what the Giants are able to afford that became a moot point. And I think that's the point with a lot of the guys who went in that first wave of free agency last week. Many of these guys, and again, it's all subjective, I get it, were really way overpriced.
Ron Parker, for example, he re-signed with Kansas City. He got about a 5-year, $30 million deal. So wherever you rank these safeties, I think across the board, they certainly cashed in on the open market. That was a big factor. The last point was in terms of the approach to free agency, Paul, do you have to think about what you're going to do 2 or 3 years down the road? Now, before I get your answer, just to preface it, keep in mind NFL rules, salary cap space can be carried over. So that is important to note when you deal with free agency. If you have X amount of dollars this year, you bring it over to 2016. So I think from a general perspective, Paul, all teams are at least thinking maybe within a 2 or 3 year time frame.
I don't think there's any question about it. You keep that in the back of your mind. What are we going to do 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road? I don't think you can project longer than three. In fact, some people probably say you can't go longer than two because of the lifespan of NFL players. But to think that the Giants have ignored that would be wrong. But at the same time, you also look at a team that is trying to retool on the fly and has certainly over the last couple of years made heavy use of one-year contracts because they don't believe they're in a wholesale rebuilding phase, which also alters what you're going to do over the course of your 1, 2, and 3 year plan. The Giants still believe at this point that they just need some more tweaking as opposed to blowing the whole thing up, which clearly would alter their perception and their direction of how they would go.
So hopefully we were able to get to all of Rudy's points. Certainly appreciate the phone call. Did throw a lot of stuff, I should say, out there. And that's going to wrap up things for us today here on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. George Selvey, the latest addition to the Giants defensive line. Plenty of articles and videos will be up on Giants.com over the next few hours. You can read up more on the latest addition to the Giants. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Big Blue Kickoff Live back on Monday, noon Eastern. We'll see you then.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.